What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Mind Over Macros podcast. As always, I am your host, Mike Milner. In today's episode of The Coach's Compass, I brought a heavy hitter to the show, an amazing guest to just incredible conversation. Like, this was truly enjoyable for me to learn and just to have a back and forth with Jill Coleman, who, if you're not following her, please go do that right now at Jill Fit. She just is the epitome of transparency in marketing, which, you know, that's kind of my thing, is that we should be showcasing what we do, pulling back the curtains, not hiding anything about our process and who we help and how we help them. And Jill does that better than anybody. So I've been following her for a while. I've learned a lot just by consuming her content, and was fortunate enough to have her on the show to bring that wisdom to you guys. So if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to both of us if you spread the love and share it. The easiest way to do that is just to take a screenshot of the episode and post it to your stories on Instagram. You can tag me at @coach_Mike_Milner, and you can tag Jill at JillFit. And yeah, please give us feedback. We'd love to hear it, and enjoy the episode. All right, what's up, everybody? I'm joined today by a very special guest. I have Jill Coleman on the show with me, and Jill is somebody that I've been following for a long time and have a massive amount of respect for, just in not just the way that she does business, but also the transparency, which I always appreciate, because that's been a big focal point for me and just helping coaches with their own content and copy. I learned, just so you know, Jill, I learned the whole, like, hide the how, don't tell people how you do what you do, dig the pain. That was the marketing that was taught to me. And when I flipped all of that on its head, it was like everything took off for my nutrition business. And so now I'm trying to help other coaches.
I love it.
Listen, don't hold anything back. Pull back the curtains, show them everything, including the process, because yes, they want the outcome, but they also care about how it all works. But I've been following you for a while and just respect what you do. So welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. This will be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to give the elevator pitch version of just, you know, how you got into the industry, where it all began, sure, and just kind of where we are today?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been in the fitness industry for 26 years, got my first job at like 15 years old in the gym nursery. So I've done pretty much everything you can do in the gym industry. And it was in 2010 that I actually made the move to go online. So this is back in sort of the golden age of blogging, when people, that was like, there weren't social media at the time. So I started a blog in 2010 just to share the conversations I was having with my clients in the gym. And what happened was, I was not a great writer. Talk about like copywriting. I was not a great writer. I was not a great, I wasn't a marketer. I was a fitness person, right? I had my degree in exercise science, a master's in nutrition. And so for me, I was like, well, let me just share the conversation I'm having and sort of what I know. And it wasn't great content, but I was really good at one thing, which is being consistent. And so we grew a readership fairly quickly on the blog at that time. And I know we'll talk about like kind of what's working in 2024 today. And I probably would not recommend starting a blog today, although that's an option. But there's a lot of different ways that you can gain traction at this point. So when Instagram started taking off and Facebook groups and Facebook pages, I sort of moved away from the blog, but a lot of my readership ended up following. And so I've been full-time online now for 14 years. And a couple of years into the journey, people started asking me, like, you know, how are you doing what you're doing? Very similar, sounds like, to what's going on with you, Mike. And I was like, well, I don't really know everything about business and online coaching, but I can at least share what I've been doing. And so I kind of started sharing the blogging model. And of course, things have evolved over the years. At Jill Fit, we still do about 25 to 30% of our revenue in direct-to-consumer fitness and nutrition digital products and coaching. And the other 70% is business coaching for health and wellness pros. So that's probably, I would say, what, at this point, I mean, I love fitness, but I'm probably on the outside looking in. For me, the business stuff is really the thing that I really love.
What made you stick with it when you first started blogging and you weren't getting, like you said, it was content? I wasn't agreeing. Yeah. It was funny because I was told the same thing by a high school English teacher that basically told me that writing's just not your thing. It's like, you're just, you know, there's other things that you can thrive, but it's not writing. And then when I started my business, I always say, I wish I could take credit and say it was some savvy business move. I literally did not know of any other way to communicate with people. Like, this was I wasn't on Instagram. I wasn't on Facebook. I mean, I was on Facebook. I wasn't using it for marketing, but it was just email. This is how we communicate. And that was about 6 years ago. And I just started doing it every single day. And same thing. It just, I didn't know what I was doing, but it picked up traction. What was the thing that made you say, I'm just going to keep showing up and putting out, you know, blog posts after blog posts?
I love this question because I feel like you have to sort of understand the climate of 2010 too, to like really understand sort of how people were doing things back then. Like now we're seeing numbers we've never seen before. You know, like your next door neighbor could have a million Instagram followers. Like, you don't know. So back in 2010, we were not seeing the kind of numbers. There was no ad on Instagram saying, make, you know, get 10K months, 20K months, 7 million, seven, you know, figure business. We didn't see those numbers. No one was like talking like that. You know, at the time, there was a really small internet marketing community. It was like a Brendon Burchard and, you know, Tony Robbins and some of these people were doing it. But the fitness industry was fairly small. It was like, are you writing for T Nation? Are you, you know, getting in men's health and women's health? Like, it was those kinds of things. And so at the time, I wasn't expecting a lot of likes. There wasn't even the ability to put a like on a post at that time. So when you were creating, you really just had to create because you just wanted to exist. And so I know that sounds maybe a little bit Pollyanna, but really it wasn't like, I didn't post something with like, okay, this has to get 100 likes. It needs to get 100 shares. Like, it wasn't really with that intention. It was more just that I felt like I needed a creative outlet. And at the time we started doing, and I want to say we, I was a competitor at the time. So I was doing fitness competitions. And so I had attracted sort of a local group of people who wanted to compete. And so my first readers and followers were people who were local to me at the time in North Carolina. And so I started hiring additional coaches. So this is, I mean, this business model is like pretty common today, which is, you know, you have 5, 6, 10 coaches and they all have, you know, full roster of clients. So we were doing that back in 2010. I didn't know it was a business strategy. I was like, I just have too many one-on-one clients and I need help. So I ended up hiring 5 additional coaches. Good problem to have, except I didn't know how to leverage the business. But at that time, it wasn't about necessarily how many likes and how much money. And to be honest, I was actually probably paying my coaches too much to the point that I wasn't really making that much money. So I think you have to filter it through the fact that we have a lot more vanity metrics now than we did back then. And so the thing that kept me going was just, I was like, I'm not doing anything else. I need to do this consistently. And I will say, having 5 coaches, I was able to have them contribute some of the content as well. So we had like a whole content schedule. We had like the ones I was doing. We had the blogs they were doing. And we were starting to just get people saying, I love your content and I don't care. For me, it was like, even if this helped one person, I published it. And so at the time, it was really more about, can we help this small group of local folks who I can't see in person? And then it kind of grew from there. And at the time, I was actually married to someone who was in the industry as well. And he was sort of a couple of years ahead of me. And so his company was having more sort of national and international success. And so it was easy for me to start to kind of model what he was doing and be mentored by him. And so I think from there, you know, you just grow that audience of strangers, but it took some time. You know, I think I work with a lot of beginners to online business now, as I'm sure maybe you do. And the expectation that they're going to come online and immediately be making 10K months. Look, I would love that for everybody. I want people to get compensated really well for the work that they do, especially personal trainers who pay a lot of money in education. You guys need to be getting compensated. But now, of course, it's more saturated. We can talk about that and sort of the challenges that come up about that. But also, you know, I think the expectation is I should be at 10K months or I should be, you know, at a multiple six-figure level because of the marketing that we're seeing. And that marketing wasn't around in 2010. I didn't see anyone. So I didn't have the expectation that I should be making more. I remember just launching something and doing a flash sale and making like $700 and being like, this is awesome. Whereas I feel like now there's a lot of more expectation that people should be making more and making it faster. And so part of what I do is really helping people build like lifestyle brands and help them build strong personal brands, which unfortunately is not going to help you within 90 days make $100,000 unless you go viral or something like that, or you have a ton of money to put into paid traffic. But for most of my clients, it's 18 months, 24 months. They start seeing the fruits of the labors that they had the first like 3, 6, 12 months. And so what I always say is, like, you know, they say most small businesses go under within 3 to 5 years. And I think it's just because people give up before then, to be honest. I think if you suck it out, just like you did, Mike, and you're like, I'm going to email my list every single day and I'm going to watch it grow. I'm going to blog every single day because I need this content to exist. And for me, that's always been the thing. It's like, I just want this to exist. It's not because there's an angle or because this is going to make me rich. It's just like, I want this conversation to be out there. I want this idea to be out there. And I wanted to just see how, if it can help even one person. And so again, I feel like it kind of maybe belittles this, the feelings that maybe people have, but it really is that simple. Do you just want to do this because you absolutely love it? And I know that I always say that it really does sound Pollyanna, but that really is it. And I'm sure you've had this experience too, Mike, like the people you see who would do this, whether or not they loved it, are the ones who end up making the most money, to be honest.
Yeah, such a great point. I didn't even think about the vanity metrics. You know, of course, there's the messaging and there's the cheap dopamine hits that we get every time we see, you know, a social media ad that promises the next six-figure launch or whatever. But even just the pursuit of likes and comments and engagement can get people caught up in this. Well, I put out a post, I got no likes, so I'm just going to stop posting.
Right. It's like immediate. It's really like immediate. They just go like 10 steps down the road. I guess maybe they shouldn't be doing this. I mean, I feel really grateful that there wasn't likes at the time. You know, there just wasn't likes. You just put it out and you're like, well, I hope someone's reading it. And you just crossed your fingers, you know? And so I think I do want to acknowledge the fact that I think people starting now have it a lot harder, to be honest, in many ways.
The fact that you set the expectation that this is going to be a, you know, 18 months, 24 months, whatever it is, like however long it takes, if you want this, it's going to take time. It's kind of ironic in a sense. Maybe that's not the best word, but the fact that the coaches that we're coaching, nutrition coaches, trainers, are basically sending the same message when it comes to, you know, body composition and health. And they're saying, hey, I know that, you know, this program over here is promising you 30 pounds in 6 weeks. But it's actually going to take, this is a lifestyle. It's going to take a while. We have to build sustainable habits. We have to do it the right way. And then they turn around and sign up for the program.
But what about me? It's not like, I'm like, it's the same for you, right? It's the same for you. It's so hard. And I get it. And I'm sure you have this experience too. There's so many parallels with body change and building a business. Now, you can chase trends. Like, you know, certainly people who come into it are just going, I'm going to throw money at stuff, or I'm going to chase trends, or I'm going to pander to the algorithm. And, you know, they might have some quick wins. But the people I see being long-term successful, right? The people that you and I know who've been doing this 5, 10, 15, 20 years, they didn't chase gimmicks, right? They didn't chase shortcuts. They were literally like, I just want this to exist. And I'm willing to pivot when things start to get tough, or I run up on an obstacle. I'm going to solve this problem versus just making it mean that I shouldn't be doing this and sort of catastrophizing in that way. So I love that you said that. Yes, there's a lot of parallels. Coaches need to take their own advice.
Yeah. So continuing with that thread, if coaches are sharing the pillars, the foundational elements for, you know, health and body composition, and preaching, you know, eat quality food, you know, get your protein in, eat your veggies, drink water, move your body, hopefully lift some weights if you can, manage stress, get some good sleep, you know, that sort of thing. What are the business pillars that would kind of parallel some of those health pillars that you hear all the time? Like, you know, because I wanted to get into some of the changes that we're seeing in the marketplace. But I think before we get into that, let's talk about the business pillars that have to be in place no matter what season or phase we're in.
Yeah, for sure. It's super simple and people want to make it. And it's really hard. I actually read this article recently called The Complexity Bias. Have you heard of this? Basically, it's just that, I mean, this makes a lot of sense, right? That the human brain craves novelty. So like you just mentioned, like 5 action items that will help someone get a result: sleep, stress management, you know, eating protein, vegetables. So what happens with our clients is they go, yeah, Mike, I hear you, but what else is there? And we're like, no, it's just these. So when business is very simple. It's literally attracting attention. We can talk about how we do that. Attract attention, whether it's on social media, platform, podcasts like this. Attract attention, build a relationship, get someone into what I call some kind of container content. So for you, it sounds like it's email marketing. It could be getting on an email list, an SMS list, into a close Facebook group, even a DM conversation, right? Now I have their attention a little bit more. And then from there, I'm walking them, I'm inviting them to take the next step, which is coaches invest with me. So it was really just three steps. It's like, okay, can we attract the right folks? And usually social media is going to be the best place to do that. And obviously podcasting, blogging as well. And then can we get their attention somehow, or we get them to jump through a hoop to get additional content, strategy, insight, value from you, wherever that is? And then is there some kind of sales mechanism, whether it's an open and closed cart launch, an evergreen funnel, something like that? There needs to be a sales mechanism or some kind of machine that then invites folks to take the next step to get even further, you know, value in a closed container, in a paid container. And so there's a million ways that you can sort of plug and play those three phases. But at the end of the day, we are in the trust business, right? We are in the trust, especially if you have a personal brand. People aren't like connecting with, you know, I don't know, Kohl's or Target. They're not like, I just love, you know, Target's personality. They're connecting with people, right? People want to connect with people. And so if you're listening to this and you have a personal brand, which means you're going to be the voice, you're going to be the face, it's going to be your content, your story that people connect with, we can't rush that process. People always say like, how can this go faster? The only way you can make all of that process go faster is publish more, right? People could just see you more. You, instead of going one post a day, you go twice a day. Instead of emailing your list once, you email twice. Instead of doing one lead magnet to get folks on your email list, you do a lead magnet every quarter and you kind of change it up. So you can hasten the trust building if you're willing to publish more, or you're willing to maybe layer on, use some paid traffic at JillFit to like hasten that relationship building. And so that's really the only way that we can make things go faster. And people don't want to hear that. Like, can I get away with posting twice a week? And I'm like, I guess, but then you can't, on the other side, complain that's all not going fast enough. So it really is a function of how quickly you want to move those people through, but that's really going to be on like touches, right? So we've heard this, it takes like, you know, at least like 7 to 10 touches for someone to want to purchase. I think it's actually probably like more like 15 at this point.
Yeah. And I think we're in a landscape now where trust is probably a little bit harder to earn. I just think because there's so many bold promises out there and the claims are getting bigger and bigger. And now everybody's slapping a, you know, ridiculous guarantee on their offers and all of this stuff that we're seeing. I think it, you know, it does require more connection, more trust building that might take a little bit longer. So let's take attention for a second. For somebody that's just getting started, they have no existing following. Maybe it's somebody who was, you know, in person, wants to move online, or they're just, you know, really passionate about health, fitness, nutrition, and they want to get started. What would be, you know, because the thing that I hear most frequently for this type of individual is it's oversaturated. How is my content going to get seen when I'm competing with people who have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers, and I'm starting with zero? And how is the content that I publish? Okay, cool. I can publish, you know, 7 times a week or however many I need to, but how am I going to stand out from an overly saturated market?
Sure. Yeah. So the first thing to know is that, yes, when people say that the marketplace is more saturated, that is true to a degree, but I want to talk a little bit deeper about that. There's just a little bit more nuance. So when we say it's saturated with coaches, that is true. There are more coaches online today than there were yesterday. There'll be more tomorrow than there are today. And so when that is the case, and I work with all these folks that are coming online, there's more coaches than ever. However, I will also point out that there's way more potential clients than they've ever been. So when I was starting in 2010, we're doing virtual one-on-one coaching. People were still like, can I send you a check? Like purchasing something online wasn't, you know, as people were still scared to put their credit card online at that point. And so now we're seeing people be way more open to virtual solutions, especially because of the pandemic. They're trying things they maybe would never have tried, like using an app or buying a home, you know, home gym equipment. Like, they're starting to be more open to doing virtual solutions than they've ever been. So instead of feeling saturated, what I'm seeing actually is that it's just more sophisticated. It's more sophisticated because we have, like, the average consumer has way more coaches to choose from. So what this means is that we really have to get clear as a coach. Number one, you have to niche down faster than anyone has ever niched down. So like for me and you, we're able to come on and be like, just talk more like vaguely about stuff. At least for me, it was like fitness, mindset, business. It was just like these big, huge pillars. Someone coming in online needs to niche down even faster because they have to put their sort of stake in the ground as being the person who does this thing. And so that's the first thing, is like, what are you known for? Who are you helping and how are you helping them? So at the end of the day, I'm going to have a whole conversation about niching down, but that's probably key. The second thing to remember is that while for us coaches, it can feel like an echo chamber. You know, I follow you, I follow, you know, maybe 70 other nutrition coaches. So I'm feeling like if I'm a nutrition coach, God, Mike's been doing this so much longer and I learned from him. So like, what else could I even contribute to the conversation? And God, I'm following all these other nutrition coaches that have 100,000 followers and they have this huge thing. They've been doing it for so long. Is there even space for me? You have to remember that for us, we're seeing it all. We're in an echo chamber. That person that you're trying to reach, that like, you know, 45-year-old mom of three who lives in Ohio, she only follows you and like two other people in the fitness industry. So she's not looking to that, you know, Instagram influencer who's 25 years old, who has a million followers. Like, that's not the connection that she wants. She's going, oh, I went to high school with Mike. And oh, I knew he's always been into fitness. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense that he's a nutrition coach now. You know, he's the person that even if I don't have a relationship with him now, I had a relationship with him in high school. So for me, there's connection there. There's no like and trust. And so we have to remember that while we can see all those successful people who have been doing it longer and have more followers, the person you're trying to reach isn't going to go to them. They're going to go to you. And so when people always say, and this is one of my biggest pet peeves, is people are like, well, I know everyone who's following me. I have no strangers. And I'm like, those are going to be your first clients, your neighbor, your high school. You know, I just had someone literally like pay $16,000 to me who I went to high school with like this year, not even, you know, when I started. And so those relationships are still very viable, but it's going to be those results you get for those folks that are going to help you reach the strangers. And so you have to slow your roll a little bit. You have to also realize you have your first 10 clients following you right now. And so, yes, you have to niche down faster. The second thing that's really, I think, a challenge about this more sophisticated audience, you kind of said it already, which was people are coming in now with more baggage. They've had more bad experiences with coaches. So when I said that I started in 2010, I was oftentimes people's very first coach, like very first online coach for sure. But now if I'm trying to, let's say I'm trying to get new, you know, one-on-one nutrition clients, a lot of times people are coming in with some kind of preconceived notion. Maybe you do macros and they're like, I already did macros, didn't work for me. Or you're like, okay, so I'm going to have you put, you know, count and we're going to use this, you know, app. And they're like, oh, I can't count, right? Or I can't count, or I've already done something like that. So, you know, it's not going to work for me. We do moderation 365. We have people come in, they're like, oh, I tried intuitive eating. It doesn't work for me. So they're coming in with a graveyard of programs that haven't worked or worked for a time and then stopped working. So guess what? Coaches need to be marketers. Like, you can't just be like, but I'm the best nutrition coach. Like, you have to actually pivot away from all of the bad experiences that they've had. And that takes marketing, messaging, communication skills, right? All the things that as fitness and nutrition pros, we don't want to learn that stuff. Like, can someone else do the selling so I can just coach? If you want to be online, it's not enough to just be the absolute best at what you do. Yes, you have to be good at what you do, but you also have to be a good marketer, which means you need to be able to communicate how you are different and better than all the things they've tried. And so when I say sophisticated, I just mean that we gotta learn business skills faster. It's not enough to just be a great coach.
Yeah, I love that. And especially the point about niching down faster, being more of a specialist than a generalist. I think when you look at marketplace saturation, and you start adding filters to it, it gets a lot smaller. Like, if I take all the coaches in the world, sure, there's a lot of them. But then if I say, okay, now give me all the coaches who can clearly tell me exactly who they help, it gets a little bit smaller. Now give me all the coaches who can say exactly who they help and what they help them solve, it gets a little bit smaller. And how they do it, now it gets even smaller. A lot of times coaches are like, well, what's my unique mechanism? And they think they have to have some fancy, never before seen or heard system that they implement, which is cool if you can be innovative, but simply being able to clearly articulate with your messaging who you help, how you help them, exactly what you help them with, and how the process works, all of that stuff. I'll even go as far and say, like, tell them what qualifications they bring to the table that helps them be successful in your program. And now it's like, not only are we helping this type of person, but you have to have experience with macros, or, you know, be in it more intermediate lifter, whatever the qualifications may be. Now all of a sudden we're dealing with a much smaller pool of coaches that can actually deliver that message confidently. And that's what makes you stand out. I had one of my clients who was like tired of the how are you different question. And I was like, have you ever done, because he had a DM conversation with somebody, basically was like, how's your program different? I worked with a one-on-one coach before. It was a terrible experience. I didn't get what I wanted out of it. And he's like, how do I turn this into a sale? And I'm like, why don't you just show her, if you have a client that's open to it, why don't you just show her behind the scenes of what the check-in process might look like with you? And he's like, oh, that's such a cool idea. So he asks one of his clients. She's like, yeah, absolutely. You can record it, send it to this woman. And send it to her. And she was like, that's not at all what my experience was like. That's so much more thorough. My other coach just said, how was the week? And that was the only thing that the check-in was. This is way more in depth. And she ended up signing on to become a client. So you can demonstrate, like I said, pull back the curtains and actually show the process. And I think a lot of the front-facing content can simply be, instead of me trying to convince you that I'm different, I'm just going to let you witness it.
Show you.
And show you through my messaging. So
I love it. There's definitely, and I'll just say on that too, there is definitely the people who I see, and I'm constantly thinking about this, who have the most success online, the longest, you know, standing success, are typically people who have finished their own health journey. Like, so I know this maybe sounds strange, but we have a lot of coaches that come online because they had their own transformation, right? So they go, oh, I've lost 50 pounds. I want to help others now, or I want to leave my corporate job. I, you know, overcame this thing, or I found weight training and I just feel like a badass, or whatever it is. But oftentimes I feel like the people who struggle the most with what do I help with and who do I help, they don't quite know yet. They haven't landed yet at their own transformation. They're still sort of like in their own stuff. Now, I don't think you ever sort of like finish, right? But at some point you have to say, you know what? I have this system. And maybe you look back at your own transformation and you go, you have to maybe jog your memory and go, yeah, what did work for me? What were the steps that I took? So I feel like the people who can identify that sort of transformation and the steps and the strategies faster, like speaking to your point about the method, right? Your method is a way that you can stand out. So yes, like you're a macro coach, but you have a specific system or framework or blueprint that you walk your clients through. You need to talk about that. And you can't talk about just one time. People are like, I have an acronym and I just talked about it once and no bites. And I'm like, okay, say it 5 million more times to the point that they're repeating it back to you, right? And so that's when we know, okay, this thing is really starting to catch on. So I do think that you have to, now you don't have to be fully transformed, but you do have to like land. I've had clients that are like, I'm intuitive eating, and then I'm macro counting, then I'm doing a show, then I'm back to intuitive. And I'm like if your journey is all over the place, then how could you ever be known for one thing? And so I do think that the people who do the best have sort of arrived and they have an expertise and they also probably have a little bit of in-person experience. You know this, Michael, like we talk about business skills. I always like talking about like skills because you can learn them. Like you just said, I wasn't really a writer, but I just wrote a bunch and I got better. So all of these things like marketing, messaging, selling, lead generation, you know, writing, all of these things can be learned. When you're a personal trainer or a group fitness instructor and you come online, you already have this skill of being able to command an audience, you know, and you know this, I mean, you're as a podcaster, even podcasting is a skill. You get on a Zoom call with like 20, 30, 50 people, you got to be able to hold that room. That's a skill too. And so when you're a personal trainer or a group fitness instructor, you already have that level of competency or confidence to show up online, you know? So the clients I have that struggle the most are like, I'm scared to do an Instagram story face to camera. And I'm like, okay, we got to like eventually ask people for money. So like, we got to get through this, you know? So there are levels to it. The people who do the best have a little bit of in-person experience because they also just know they're good. They've gotten results for folks before. So you're not getting your first client online and be like, I don't know if I can get them a result. You've already gotten 20, you know, dozens of people results, hundreds of people results. And then you also, you know, have finished your own transformation so you can speak intelligently on the whole thing versus you being in flux as well. How could you possibly have an audience be able to follow if you can't even follow what you're doing?
Yeah, completely. And to piggyback on what you said about the method, when somebody says, you know, oh, what I do is personalized, it depends. You know, somebody wants to intuitively eat, great, I can help them with that. If they want to track macros, I can help them with that. If they want to build muscle, I can help with that. If they want to lose fat, I can help with that. How do you help them kind of tease out, like, what's the thing? Because oftentimes there's the personalization, everyone's different, which is great, but that's also really difficult to market.
And it's also hard to niche down, right? So this is actually something I deal with a lot with my beginner students, because they do have so many things they could help with, especially if you come from a personal training background. You're like, well, I have worked with, you know, postpartum moms, and I have worked with young kids trying to get better at sports, and I have worked with that 7-year-old osteopenia client. So like, we have the experience. So oftentimes they will take their experience in person and go, well, I don't want to cut off the options, right? I could help all these people. And you're right, Mike. Like, it is a huge mistake to try to be a jack of all trades, because you've heard this, like when you try to speak to everyone, you end up speaking to no one. So if you have all of these skills, I can help someone with macro count, I can help them with, and I do have clients like this, by the way, who have all these different tools in their tool belt. You have to figure out what's going to be the thing that first you want to become known for. So it's not that you can't deploy some of those other tools that you have, but, and I'll explain this in a second, but that might be in a different level container. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I actually did have a client who was like very macro focused. She was like, that's how she does it. She believes in macros, and that was her signature offer. So whether your signature offer is a one-on-one coaching offer or a group offer or a course of some kind, you're just like, okay, I'm macro coach. And that's going to be your front-facing messaging. It's like, I do macros and I do them, I don't know, this way, like protein-centric or protein-forward or whatever. Like, you can make it however you want. But you have to start with one thing. Then what she was noticing was she was getting more and more clients who were going through her macro program, and they were getting great results. But at some point, there was a percentage of them that didn't want to count anymore. And so she came to me and was like, what do I do with these people? They want to keep working with me, but they don't want to count and measure. They kind of got it. They've graduated. They're good to go. So she actually did a certification. She did the Mod 365 certification. And then she pulled some of the macro folks up into a higher level container around mindfulness and moderation. So it wasn't, so it's like, she's not front facing saying, I'm a mindset and moderation and intuitive eating coach. The front facing messaging was around macros. She built her signature offer off of that. And then when those folks are ready to, some of them graduate to the next level, she had a mindful eating mentorship that she was able to pitch for them. So your front facing, it doesn't mean you can never do the other stuff, but you have to be very conscious of what your front facing messaging is going to be. So choose one specific offer you're going to go all in on. And it can be a one-on-one coaching offer. It can be a group offer of some kind. That's really going to be your signature offer that you're going to scale. Because as soon as you start getting more and more people going through that specific education, now you have a group of people who would be the best qualified leads to pull into a second offer, and you can increase your lifetime value of your customer and stuff like that. But you can't message and market multiple different types, modes of doing nutrition within the same couple months or within the same year even. So hopefully that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I can speak from personal example. When I started teaching copywriting to coaches, which was just on request, how can I learn to write like this? I didn't say I can write copy for nutrition coaches. I had a very specific framework that was like, I teach belief shifting copy. Basically, we're getting to the identity and belief level of our audience, and we're giving them an aspirational identity or a new belief system that aligns with our methodology so that they inquire and enroll in your program. Like, I leaned in on this one little framework and just hammered it home over and over again. And everybody who joined that course to learn that framework, and yes, when they joined the course, there was how to write an offer email, how to do launch emails. There was other assets, but it was all centered around learn this belief shifting framework to write copy that attracts best fit clients. And then when it was time to launch my group coaching, which was actually reviewing and helping you edit and define your messaging and all of that stuff, I just pulled from people who were in the course, and it was the easiest one little post and Telegram chat and sold out. And now I have a wait list for that program. And it's exactly what you're talking about. If I tried to go wide, people are like, well, I don't really need copywriting. But because it was so specific and a very detailed framework of like, nobody else is talking about this, this is my thing. It was very easy to scale that and then to use that as kind of my front facing offer that then ascends people into coaching. And now it kind of just, you know, runs itself.
Yeah, because then they're like, oh, I got to win with Mike when it comes to writing my emails for my launch. What else can he teach me, right? And then it becomes like everything else that maybe you have to offer. Like, I can help you create your first offer, and I can help you, you know, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you have to start with one thing. And what I do notice, at least lately, is that there's just a, but besides the sort of expectation of like, I should be getting it more, faster, easier, is people want to do like one thing and then never do it again. And you have to have consistency with your offer. So for example, you said we have this sort of identity shifting framework. If you just said that one time and then you're like, okay, what else? And then you like went to the next thing, you would never have actually like built the clout around that one specific thing. And so what I see is I see people actually having pretty successful launches in my mind. I'm like, you're 3 months into this and you just like, you know, made like $2,500. Like, that's amazing. Off like a group launch. But they go, it should have been bigger. So then they throw it out and then they start from scratch with a brand new offer. And I'm like, we'll just stick with that thing that you like, that you did well with. You know, I always think about, we have our signature offers called FBA, it's Fitness Business Accelerator. And the first time we launched that thing in 2018, it was, we've done it like 8 or 9 times now. First time we had 30 people in it. And I was stoked because I'm like, it's a brand new offer. It has no social proof yet. Like, I was pumped. And I think the price point was like $1,200. And this last launch we did like close to $315,000 and like 140 units, but like it took 8 launches, right? So like, but like people throw it out and now we charge $4,500 instead of $1,200. And so you can increase your price over time. Now the thing has a reputation. People are putting it on their vision board. They're signing up for the wait list. Like, so you have to have some consistency with your offer. So if your first one doesn't go as well as you think it should have, don't just throw it out. You can adjust it. You can enhance it. You can certainly change it. But we want our offers to have their own reputation so that people, like literally people are like, how much is FBA? I want to save up for it so I can launch, you know, so I can enroll in September. We want people knowing about our offers. It goes back to the transparency conversation. Like, I'm not trying to hide the fact that like, I believe this is the best beginner to online business course on the market. And I want people to be excited about that. I want them not to feel blindsided by a sale and be like, oh, I thought Jill was just giving away free stuff. Like, this feels weird. I want them to be pumped about it, like, and excited and waiting at their computer when the doors open with a credit card in hand. And you can generate that kind of excitement, but only if you have transparency and consistency around your offers.
Yeah, completely. That brings up a good topic. You mentioned sticking it out and not just throwing it away because the launch didn't go as well as you thought. When is the time to pivot? Because I think now, or even looking at it from, you know, platform specific, like I went all in on Instagram and, you know, it was working, but now it's not working as well. Do I tackle Facebook at this point and, or an offer? I put out an offer and, you know, or I actually just had a really good example of somebody who was running Facebook ads and he was doing a group funnel and just absolutely crushing like ad to Facebook group. Then they're collecting phone numbers and just doing SMS conversations, booking calls and scaled very quickly. But then all of a sudden, conversations weren't as good. The leads weren't as good. The ads weren't working as well. And so like, when do you kind of assess mm-hmm. that it's time to pivot, move to a new platform, reassess your offer? And I think it's just mm-hmm. a good open conversation mm-hmm. to discuss.
Yeah. I mean, I always try and start with the end in mind. And so actually I teach a 3-part debrief, like a launch debrief system. And this is actually just really diagnostic if you wanting to know like what needs to change. So first things first, and I usually use the launch model. We don't do a ton of evergreen at Jill Fit. We do have clients that do a lot of high ticket evergreen one-on-one. We can talk a little bit about that. But so we talk about an open and closed cart launch. And you had mentioned earlier a group coaching offer that you're doing specifically. So I assume when I say open and closed cart, it means that there's a certain number of days that people can enroll. Typically, there's going to be some kind of runway leading up to it with some kind of related or tangential lead magnet of some kind, maybe a webinar or a challenge, or we use a 3-part video series. So something where you're sort of corralling attention, and that lead magnet is going to be, it's what we call your sales mechanism, right? You can kind of think about it like your free experience, kind of like a washing machine, right? Like you put leads into it, you do some stuff with it, and then sales come out the other side. And so that's going to be your sales mechanism, whether it's a webinar, whether it's a, like I said, a challenge, 3-part video series, e-course of some kind. And so when we look at that model of launching, and this is what we teach, which is, again, like lead generation into an experience and then sell, there's only really 3 things that we always have control over in any launch. The first thing that we can control is the number of leads that we put into the machine, right? So let's just say I do organic promotion on social media, use my email newsletter, you know, use my social media, and I get 100 leads. I'm like, cool, got 100 people. Well, a lead is someone who is a qualified person for a sale, but they're not a customer quite yet. And so then I have 100 people that I'm putting into this machine. Let's just say it's a webinar. So I have that. Then I go into my webinar And I can always control how I show up in that webinar, the messaging during the lead magnet. Am I messaging folks in a way that shows them that they need my solution? So there's this and this is like sort of more of the advanced stuff that I teach, but like oftentimes what people do with the webinars, they'll get a whole bunch of people on, they'll just like teach like crazy, and then they'll pitch for 5 minutes. And so what really we have to look at, if we want to improve that, improve the conversion percentage into a sale, is we need to look at what we're saying during that webinar. Not just like, am I teaching the smartest thing, but like, am I moving people towards a sale? Is the offer caked in to the webinar? Do people know it's coming? Are they excited about it? Like, if you're doing a great job, people should be on the webinar asking you how much the program is before you even pitch, because you're walking them towards that solution. So there's a whole system and we can look at that. But then it goes, we look at engagement metrics. What's the show up rate? What's the email open rate? We do like something like a scorecard where people have to submit it and they get like, you know, they get prizes. So it's like, how can we get more people engaging in that lead magnet, whatever it is? What's the percentage of folks who are participating in that lead magnet? And then the third thing, of course, is all the marketing and selling. Like, cool, open cart. You know, what do we have during open cart? Emails, like to your point, copywriting emails, right? Sales page stuff. So we break it down. So you have to do one launch first to even have a baseline. You have to do one first. And typically, if you're just doing organic promotion, like you're not using any paid traffic, any ads, we usually see people converting between 5 and 10%, which is pretty high. Industry standards, like 2 to 3%. So it's pretty high. If you're using all warm traffic, people already know you, the percentage of folks who are in the lead who convert into sales is 5 to 10%. So if I have 100 leads, I'm looking at 5 to 10 sales. Most people are like, well, at least surely half of them will purchase, right? It's like, no, like I wish. No, it's 5 to 10. So this is where the expectation management comes in, you know? So someone's like, oh my God, I worked my ass off and got 100 leads, which is great. Especially if you're new, you got 100 people on your list. It's awesome. But they expect that because of that, they should get more sales. And I'm like, no, it's 5 to 10%. Like, it's right in that middle. And if you add cold traffic, it's probably going to go down a little bit. Now we're talking like 4%. We had our biggest launch ever at Jilt that we converted at 2.6%. But it was like our biggest launch. We had a lot of leads. So then if we are converting between 5 and 10 and like check off, and we like successfully did that, then the move is just get more leads, right? Double the leads. You're converting well, so just double the leads. Instead of 100 leads, next time let's get 200 leads, get 500 leads, because the sales mechanism is working. Now, if it's above 10%, I'm like, great, maybe it's your first launch. Maybe you mopped up all like the hottest leads. Now we got to go in and maybe add some paid traffic on top of it. Like, you can actually come down a little bit. We just need more leads. And then if you're converting below 5%, we look at messaging. Like, cool, you had an awesome number of leads. You just convert how we wanted to convert. So we look at the performance of the launch, and there's a ton of metrics that we teach to like actually make this thing fairly predictable. There's this misconception in online business that it's so unpredictable and it's crazy. But if you look at the numbers, and most coaches and trainers don't want to look at numbers, but when we actually look at some of the metrics, we can see fairly well, like we can kind of predict the number of sales that we're going to make. It's not just like a crapshoot, but you have to be systematic. And coaches don't want to be. They just want to like, you know, create something and then like launch it in 2 days. And then they're like, why no one bought? And like, there was no runway. There was no free experience with you. There was no anticipation. There was no bonuses. Like, there was no incentive for someone to purchase. And so we have to slow our roll if we really want to build like a real business. You know, you can't just be a coach and be really good and like just post on social media, expect to make $1 million. We have to really look at the back end of the business. And this is why I always say, like, followers are not the same as a business. And so yes, followers can help. And I just had a client go viral, added 160,000 new followers in like a week. And because of that, she ended up doing a $150,000 launch. So yes, numbers matter. But that's not the same as a business. She had in place the lead magnet. She had in place the marketing copy. She had in place the high converting sales page. She had in place the sales emails. Like, she had all that in place. If you just go viral, but you don't have the back end stuff, you're just really popular, which is nice, but you're probably not converting that to sales.
Yeah, completely. And you just alluded to another irony that I didn't even think of before, which is that coaches don't like to look at numbers. But yet when it comes to nutrition, they're like, hey, you have to track. You have to know your numbers. Otherwise, but yet there's a big resistance for some reason to metrics.
It's actually not that hard.
Yeah. Somebody had me write their sales page, and he launches this product and is like, oh my God, I only have 8 sales. And he's like freaking out. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, let's look at the total metrics of like how many people hit the page.
How many leads?
Right. Yeah. He's like, we had 100 people hit the page. I was like, we're converting at 8%.
Crushed it. I was
like, get people to the page. It's doing what it's supposed to do. And he's like, oh, yep. That simple. I'm like, yeah, stop panicking.
It's really that simple.
Let the data make our decisions for us. So when it comes to platform pivoting, are you on the same like mm-hmm. wavelength of start with one and it like for gaining attention for somebody who wants to build an audience? Is it just, are you more like go wide or just let's go deep on one? And then when do I tackle the next platform?
Yeah, consistency before optimization for sure. So I tend to tell most of my clients to start with Facebook and Instagram because I feel like there's a good amount of like sort of overlap on those two platforms. So mostly people will start there, but then, you know, consider where your audience is. You know, it was interesting. I had a client who was like, she's like in her late 40s, early 50s. And she was like, I don't know, I should be on TikTok. Like, I feel like I should be keeping up the trends. And I'm like, are your audience Gen Z? And she's like, no. And I'm like, well, then it doesn't matter. Like, if you want to be over there, great. But you don't have to be if that's not where your audience is necessarily hanging out. So I feel like it's just one other like sort of thing to chase. I do think that we're seeing a little bit of a resurgence with Facebook, at least with my demographic. Like, I think a lot of people left, which means there's more opportunity over there. But really you're looking at, I probably wouldn't add more additional platforms until you've optimized one. So for example, if you're not even being consistent on Facebook or Instagram, then you don't want to like add a YouTube and add TikTok or LinkedIn. And so you have to look at where your people are hanging out, where's your biggest ROI. And then what I'd recommend if someone is trying to diversify their platforms is you probably want to start with, I recommend starting with like one, what I call epic piece of content, whether it's going to be a podcast, whether it's a video of some kind, whether it's a blog. And then from there, try to take pieces of that for the week. So for example, let's say you do one podcast a week. And then can we pull reels from that? Can we pull TikToks from that? Can we pull, you know, YouTube shorts from that? Can we put the whole thing on YouTube? Can we pull like a couple quote cards or can we pull a carousel post from that? And so try to not create everything from scratch all the time. If you're going to be on multiple platforms, just start with one more epic piece of content that you can break down. But again, this gets into like, do we have someone helping us? Do we have someone doing videos for us? Like, this is a lot for a new trainer. I always say, and you know, Mike, like, a lot of times people come in and they already have a packed schedule, whether they're personal training in person or they're working with clients in person or they're a mom of three or they're running around. Like, so most people are already busy and then they're trying to add like 15 to 20 more hours of online business on top of that. We have to audit our time and really go like, where's the biggest ROI? So like consistency before optimization. A lot of folks will not post consistently because like it's not good enough. And I'm like, you have to just do a lot of not good enough reps before it starts becoming good enough. That's the irony of it. It's like, if you want it to be perfect, you have to do a lot of imperfect actions to arrive closer and closer to perfect. I mean, I'm sure this is your experience with email marketing and writing your email list. I'm sure your earliest emails were not great, but you just kept showing up and you got better. And that was my experience as well. And so I think we have to be okay with some like shitty reps to get started wherever we are. And then from there, start to diversify. Now, when people say like Instagram isn't working like it used to, it's still working better than most things. You know what I mean? I think that you have to think about that. When people say launching isn't working, I'm like, it's still working better than Evergreen. Like, unless you have a shitload of ad spend, it's still probably working better than Evergreen. So we have to, so things have changed. I do want to validate that like, you know, when I started in 2010, I was only one of a handful of online fitness and nutrition coaches who were women, you know? So now we have to get better at business. We like the idea that you are going to get away with not doing some kind of business education as a health pro. I just think those days are over.
Yeah. And I think you touched on something earlier that I really wanted to highlight as well, which was you mentioned the launch and that you get the data by doing the first launch. And I think so many times we're asking for feedback without doing the thing. I tell my clients, engage the field is the way that I frame it. So like, I'm going to teach you something, then go engage the field and then come to me with data, because my opinions and my theories and my hypothesis doesn't mean anything. You know, it's not going to supersede your inaction data. That's what matters. So go engage the field and then come back to me and say, here's what I did. And here's the data that I have. And now we can make more appropriate, you know, decision-making. You know, we can come up with better ideas based off of that. But I think so many times it's, well, I want to get it perfect. And what exactly
the first time
should I do a reel versus this? Just just go do the thing.
Do both. Do it all.
Right.
I think that coaches are feeling like things are really high stakes. And I'm always like, this is the best time to fuck up, like right now. Like, this is the smallest your audience is ever going to be. This is the smallest your business is ever going to be. Like, get your shitty reps out now when you don't have that many people watching. And so I think there is this feeling of it's so high stakes. I don't want to mess it up. And I'm like, look, like, you're going to have to get through like that messy, you know, and I do believe that the people who have the most success are the most willing to publish, even when it's not perfect. It's so funny. I was messing my team because I posted a reel last night. We're doing lead gen for this new fitness offer. And I posted a reel last night and like we have a mini chat on it, which if you guys are listening to this, maybe you don't know what that is. It's basically like a software that you guys have seen this on social media where it's like drop the word, drop the keyword, and then it DMs you or whatever. So yesterday we just announced the lead gen and this thing has like, I don't know, 700 comments on it. It's like really going off. And I looked at the reel, it's like two huge typos in the reel. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter. We're still working. People are getting the gist, but there's like two huge typos like on the actual reel, but it is what it is. Like you just gotta, it works.
And sometimes that shows the human side and somebody, you know, somebody reading it of just being like, that this is just a real person putting out content. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I think that's, you know, another great example of just get it done. And then you have the feedback of, oh, it actually made no difference. And we still got 700 comments.
I know it's been really fun.
Do you enjoy more of the like advanced business owner helping them kind of scale and, you know, go from whatever 10K and above, or are you more like, I love working with the beginner who's just kind of entering the space and helping them build a foundation right from the beginning?
I love both, but for different reasons. So a lot of business coaches don't like working with beginners because they're like, they're cheap. They have too many mindset issues. They need like to be handled with kid gloves, which I do sort of experience some of that. But the best thing about working beginners is that like the smallest things feel like the biggest wins to them. And I'm sure you have this with nutrition clients too. And it's the same where someone will be like, I just posted on my first, you know, story on Instagram and like they're celebrating. And I'm like, I love that because I feel like when you go from not doing any of this, it's just nonstop aha moments. You're like, oh my God, I could do this. I could do this. I guess it's such a fun phase to be in. So I love being, and that's mostly what we work with. I would say probably the majority of our clients are in those beginning stages. Not everyone sort of makes it to the next level, but it's good for people, especially I work with a lot of women, 35 plus moms who are like, just want to have something that's their own. And so to see them start to like make a difference in the lives of others is so fulfilling to me. So I think, but again, as a coach, and you know this, like as a coach, you have to deploy a lot more patience and a lot more empathy and a lot more, you kind of have to, you know, work through some of those mindset challenges. And in my experience, it's usually the first like 6 to 12 months that a lot of the mindset challenges like comparisonitis and am I good enough and you know, imposter syndrome and all those kind of things sort of creep up. And so I love being the facilitator and helping people just take massive action so they can actually create a show of evidence that they could actually do this. That's really fun. The thing I like working about with advanced folks is they just move fast. Like it's very fast. It's basically like from idea to implementation, super quick. They've worked through a lot of the mindset challenges. Oftentimes by the time I get to them, they've already like talked themselves off the ledge. Like they've already kind of done the pep talk that they need if their launch goes sideways or if they don't get the result that they want. They'll often say, you know, I'm disappointed, but, and then they'll go into like this whole, you know, solution and puzzle and thing they want to try next and whatever. So the thing with the advanced business owners is, they're too big to fail. Like they're already at the level where like, yeah, they might have a bad launch or they might, you know, if something goes sideways, something doesn't pan out, but they're not going anywhere. You know, with the beginners, it is a little bit touch and go. Like, cause you know, if they, you know, posting and not getting any likes for, you know, a month is not benign on their encouragement. You know what I mean? So there is that feeling. And this is probably the same with nutrition clients. Like they need to get some wins at the beginning. Now it's not going to be a massive transformation, but they do have to get some wins to keep going. Whereas with, you know, we're talking different numbers with my more advanced students. They're like, I just did a 50K launch. I want to scale to 100. I'm like, okay, no one's going to be, you know, hungry. Like we can pay our bills here. So, but with beginners, there oftentimes is that feeling of like, I need this to work, this urgency of like, this has to work because I have to pay my bills this month. That can be a lot of pressure on a coach. But you know, that's what we sign up for is like, yeah, like when there is responsibility and there's accountability that has to happen. And I kind of like that because I think a lot of people shirk responsibility And I think it's kind of a nice opportunity for a coach who's willing to take on that responsibility. So I do like both, but for different reasons.
Yeah, that's great. I love that answer. It's funny because I have written on my whiteboard, it says in big letters, pull back the curtain, show them everything. I wrote that in January of 2021, which was when I completely overhauled like my whole marketing strategy. And that was like all the things that I taught that I hated, or that I was taught that I hated. I was just like, I'm going to do
that. I love it.
And so that stays in my office on the whiteboard as a reminder. You're doing something really cool where you are quite literally pulling back the curtains and showing, if I understand correctly, it's basically showing coaches how you're launching a fitness product and letting them kind of see like all the ins and outs of what goes into the launch and the fulfillment. And so why don't you explain it? Cause I'm probably butchering it.
Yeah. We actually just launched this. So we are launching a fitness program called Lean Building, and we went ahead and sort of, I was like, you know what? We're launching this anyway. We're doing about a 6-week runway for it. When I say runway, I mean like lead generation, like I said, getting people into that sales mechanism, that sales machine. And so we do have a large, obviously, percentage of our audience of professionals. So I was like, you know what? Why don't we build this mini course called Six Figure Fitness in real time? Because I have a lot of clients who want to build a digital product. They want to do a fitness product. And so this is basically, we're doing the launch in real time, and the team is just adding stuff to this course. So we're building this like business mini course alongside the launch for the fitness offer. Now we're calling it Six Figure Fitness because our goal for this offer is to make six figures off of this. And so I don't know, we'll see. We have our numbers in place and we have our, you know, our goals and things like that, but I'm sort of building it with my audience at the same time. So I'm throwing things in there every week around like ad copy, ad creative, promotional calendar. Everyone in that program is going to get all of our sales emails, all of our social media posts. They're getting like even how to program the workouts. I'm kind of pulling back the curtain on like how I'm programming the workouts exactly, how we're building the course in Kajabi, like just pretty much everything that they would need to know to not only build an offer, but how to create lead gen around it and then eventually sell it. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, it feels a little vulnerable to be honest. We're like, we want to be a six-figure launch. It's low ticket. It's like, you know, $27-$37. So we need a lot of folks. But yeah, it's been fun so far. So
that's cool. The coaches that are in that, they are able to see the actual course being put together, and then kind of seeing like in real time how the launch is being teed up and all the mechanisms that you're using and the copy and where people are going, just like the whole funnel process. Is that right?
The whole funnel process. Yeah. So they're getting access to, we're in the lead gen phase right now. So they've gotten access to our ads, our ad copy, our ad budget, like pretty much all of that. I'm taking videos of our team meetings, like who does what in the team, checklist, promotional calendars, all that kind of stuff. So people know like what needs to happen when. And oftentimes, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of times coaches will be like, I want to launch this. And they'll like literally think of it and then launch it the next day. I think it's just good for folks to see like how much goes into, if you want to do a six-figure launch, like how much prep time goes into it and, you know, how much strategy goes into it and lead time and things like that. So yeah, I'm basically building it out as we go. And so right now we're in the lead gen phase, and then we'll get into the selling, but they like the messaging, the promotion, how I do the sales page, how I do the opt-in pages, the conversions on those things, like they'll get access to all of that stuff. Yeah, it's super fun. Like, so to your point about transparency, it doesn't get more transparent than this.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. I'm taking notes right now. So is that open for coaches to join? Can they still get
it? It is. Yeah, it's going to be a mini course. It's if you guys want to go to jillfitprograms.com and then it's /6SIX-figure-fitness. It's called Six Figure Fitness. And it's basically just, again, like I said, pulling back the curtain. I think we're like 2 weeks into it now. We got about 4 more that we're adding. So before our launch. Yeah, it's really fun.
They'll keep access to the course and everything.
Oh yeah, it's lifetime access. Yep.
So yeah, I'll make sure that link is in the show notes so everybody can jump in there. So what made you stay with, one last question, because I know I want to respect your time, but the launch model, what makes you like that versus trying to do something a bit more evergreen?
Sure. So actually, we are trying to do a little bit more evergreen for some of our lower ticket stuff. We have a ton of like low ticket offers that we, you know, we do launch stack and things like that, upsells, downsells, bumps, stuff like that. But we're really trying to get a standalone funnel. And that's one of our big projects in the next few months. But I still love the launch model because personally, it's kind of like interval training, right? It's like push hard, rest hard. So I have colleagues of mine that do Evergreen, where they're doing like setters and closers and all this kind of stuff constantly. And I just don't personally love that. And honestly, like our launches have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's hard to, and I know that's not everyone's experience, but we do, like when I outlined the launch formula and the three different things, we're always looking at those things and how we can tweak them. And so our launches have only gotten bigger. So it's hard to like walk away and be like, all right, now we do a weekly webinar. I don't want to work every week like in that way. You know, I want to be able to like go to Australia for like 4 weeks and not like talk to anybody. So for me, the launch model is sort of like interval training. I get that for not for everyone. Sometimes it can be an emotional roller coaster for people. So they, and then they have like, you've heard of like, you know, post-launch PTSD and stuff like that. Some people don't love the emotional. I've just gotten really good at being clinical with everything. And so for us, it always comes down to numbers. It's numbers and messaging, and that's really it. And so those are the things that we continue to tweak. So if you're willing to set up a cadence and you're willing to get strategic and clinical with your launches, I do think that they could be a lot more beneficial. I think the best is probably both. Yeah. I think that having something running in the background on ads that's automated, and then having some live launches throughout the year, probably the best.
Your schedule, just curious, when you're in launch mode versus when you're in recover mode, what does that look like from just like working on the business?
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky at this point. Like I have a lot of team at this time, but like, you know, mostly I would say probably on average when I'm not launching, I'm probably working 20 hours a week. And when I'm launching, I'm definitely working 40. So it'd be like the last couple weeks of the launch. Really, it's just anything that I need to be a part of. So we talked about that like sales mechanism. If it's a webinar, series of webinars, challenge, obviously I'm all in that. And then I'm all in the selling. So that's usually, it's about a couple weeks like that. But for the most part, I would say 20, 25 weeks of 25 hours a week on average.
So we don't have to grind our faces off for 80 hours a week.
No, I mean, also like people make things harder than it has to be. You know what I mean? Like I just told you guys that I had a super successful reel that had two huge typos in it. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I think we overcomplicate things, and I understand everyone works a little bit differently and people have different stresses and anxieties and things like that. And it took me a while to be able to get to the point where I can see everything very clinically. I also know, and I don't know if you have a team, Mike, but you also have to pay attention to the energy you're bringing to your own team. So for me, if I'm mid-launch and I get a huge emotional hijack and I come to the team and I'm like stressed out, do you think that they're going to feel like how they're going to feel about showing up in the ways that they need to show up? So I'm always hedging like what my energy is and my internal state with what the outcome is. And in my experience, we don't get a better outcome if I'm more stressed. We just don't. So for me, that's always the end of the day. Like, how can I maintain my own internal peace and stay as clinical as possible so that I can show up for the team and they get to work and they get excited about what's possible for us too.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing. This has been very insightful for me, and I'm sure for everybody listening. Where can all the coaches who listen, where can they connect with you, find you, and you know, sign up for the stuff that you've got going on?
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, just a Jill Fit on all the socials. And then probably if you guys are interested in more business content, we have a podcast called Fit Biz You. That's just all for fitness pros for business. So that would be it.
I will make sure all of that gets linked in the show notes. Jill, always a pleasure. I appreciate your time, and we will chat soon.
Thanks so much, buddy.